This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
David West, man, he really wants to win a ring.
He really does.
Kevin Rafuse.
To be good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzak.
Between Rose, Mello, and Noah, those guys are really well-known players, and that's that right there kind of gives you the all super team vibe.
Well, if you like that, you're gonna love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this.
Let's go.
So, you know, there's a saying in life, it's some things never change, and boy oh boy, is that true already this preseason.
I mean, I will say, in my roast, I said, what's the over-under on nut shots this season? And, well, I guess we should say there's already been one.
Well, no. It wasn't a nut shot.
It was close.
It was an attempted nut shot. Either way, so Draymond Green preseason game against the Trailblazers.
Wasn't against Alan Crabb or something?
Right. It was either that or it was Myers-Leonard.
No, I think it was Alan Crabb.
All right.
Was it?
Either way, falling to the ground. Kicks him. This time it goes to like his chest, shoulder area, so it's nothing crazy. But Draymond Green is ready for the season.
I wonder if the NBA is going to start, because it's become such a prevalent thing with him, if the NBA is just going to start finding or suspending him games every time he does one, to be like, stop kicking people, man.
And the other thing is, like, I don't know. One point, I almost want to defend him a little bit, saying, like, I get it. If you're, like, falling backwards, you're, like, to try to gain your balance again, you, like, kind of put your foot up. And so, like, I get it in that, but it's just, like, it's very convenient that foot keeps going up and hitting people.
Right? Man, that closing lineup, it's just, what do you in the world do you do against that?
Well, in the ball movement already, which is one of the things that really surprised me the most, is I was thinking the ball movement in particular.
It's slow
integrating
down.
Integrating Durant would at least take a little bit more time. But, I mean, I'm watching some of this stuff, and, like, if you're running a fast break and you have Durant going off, to one corner, Klay Thompson going off to the other corner, and Iggy cutting.
You're done.
The
it's
defense,
over.
Who do
you
guard?
You don't know what to do. You just kind of, all right. Because if you step up on Iggy, they're going to pass it out to Klay or Durant. And then if you step out on that, Iggy's going to slam it down your throat.
Maybe if teams yell brick really loud, they'll start missing some shots.
There are people, when you play basketball against them, that do like to yell every time you take a shot. Mm-hmm. And I will say, I tried that with Justin.
Yeah.
And that actually, like, makes you shoot better.
I haven't been able to play in a while because I sprained my ankle, which has really just been frustrating me. But when I was growing up, I never practiced, like, just, like, went out and shot baskets. I would always just play basketball, like, in-game. So I'm way better when someone is, like, closing out on me and I'm shooting, or someone's, like, in my face when I'm shooting. Because that feels normal, that there's somebody there. When there's no one there, I don't feel the pressure to, like, shoot right, and I think my shot takes too long.
Well, you know what I'm going to do then, now when I'm guarding
you're just
you,
sag off.
Is when I see you going up for the shot, I'm just going to run to the rim for the rebound. I'm not even going to try and close out. I'm just going to turn the other way.
Well, then
the
you
basket.
Better hope I don't drain them all the time.
Yeah, right. Well, apparently you drain fewer of them if
yeah.
I run away.
We'll have to get, like, a tracker or something like that. They do have an app.
Sport View cameras.
Yeah.
We should have Sport View cameras for our basketball
games.
Oh, God. I don't want to see our advanced stats at all. We don't need that.
You guys are a negative.
No, it is not a negative. The Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Welcome, everyone. My name is Kevin Rafuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
Giggity.
There it is. Mm-hmm. The midweek giggity.
Mm-hmm. And each week, we love to give a shout out to one of our listeners for hooking us up with a review on iTunes, Stitchers, anywhere, really. It just helps us move up the ranks and helps other people find us.
Yeah, this one is from the UK. It is titled UK Fan, 2 exclamation points. It's a 5-star review by Dan Graham. And Dan Graham says, hey guys, really love this podcast. Get to listen to you at work and it makes my day. As a UK fan from Newcastle, parentheses, the north of England, it's hard keeping up with all the NBA stuff. Especially love the news report. Now, please tell me some good news about the 76ers. Yes, I am a 76ers fan.
I'm assuming he sent this before we did our Sixers interview.
Probably,
with
yes.
Michael KB. If not, just go back 2 episodes.
Well, and, we can give him some good, short good news for Sixers fans. Embiid looks great. Dario looks like he can play some basketball.
Nerlens Noel's going to play at some point.
He had surgery on his knee.
Jahlil Okafor played 8 minutes. He had a really sweet spin move against
the Heat. I was just going to say that. I was watching the game. I saw that spin move. I was like, man, that's really impressive.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. See, as much as I've talked bad about Jahlil Okafor at times, like his post moves and his offense are
Covington's
really,
three-point
really good.
Shot isn't there. That's a good thing.
Why is that a good thing?
I got to bring us back down to earth. We were right.
We're Sixers fans. Do we need to be brought back down to earth?
I've taken the time to watch some basketball. There's a few things that are just absolute truths. The Sixers, you guys are going to be awful. I'm sorry. It's going to be really bad. Also, the Miami Heat.
You're not on board?
Oh, Lord.
You know, honestly,
they got problems.
For how much hate we give the Nets, and don't get me wrong, this isn't me saying they're going to be good. I still think the Nets are going to be bad. They were really playing with some heart, though. Like, they were really out there hustling and booking it, and they looked good.
I think the Nets have lost every preseason game.
But they were hustling and they have heart. Like with a team that doesn't have a very bright future, they were out there trying. Jeremy Lin was doing a great pick and roll with Lopez. Like, it looked good.
Let me ask you a question regarding the preseason. FYI, we record the midweeks in advance, so getting ready for our fantasy draft with our listeners. And so I've been checking out the box scores in the morning, and one of the players I was thinking about targeting was Brook Lopez, and I'm looking at his numbers through the preseason. I got to tell you, while I'm not so worried about the lack of field goal percentage or the bad field goal percentage, I should say, with Lopez, but during the preseason, man, he's grabbing like 3-4 rebounds a contest.
Is that
something I should be worried about for the regular season?
Well, that's my whole thing, is like, do you worry about these things in regular in preseason? Like, there's a lot of players, like I think even Joe Johnson shooting like a 13% from three or something.
I'm
and
pretty
it's just
sure
like,
that's what Joe Johnson always shoots.
Are you sure about that?
No.
Because I feel like it's usually high, but that's the thing, is like Covington's low, Hood's shot percentage is low, and like it's things like that. Like, do you take it? But obviously they're not playing as many minutes as they probably be playing in a normal season, right?
No, but I think it was you know, looking at how I take that into account, of course, yeah. But I think there was he'll play like 25 minutes a game, get like 2 or 3 rebounds. Mm-hmm. You know, he's out. Well, he's being out rebounded by like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
Well, and here's the thing, is like that argument that, like, so when you talk about preseason and you can say, oh my God, this guy's getting like 15 rebounds a game, or what is it? Drummond's at 14 rebounds a game, and then someone's gonna be like, well, it's preseason.
Well, he's also going to average like 14
rebounds
a game.
Right,
though.
But then that same person will come to you and be like, oh my gosh, Harden's averaging, you know, or only shooting 10% from three. That's completely false, by the way. I'm just making this off the top of my head. And then the person right back is just going to be like, well, it's preseason. And I hate that argument. I hate the well, it's preseason argument, because it can go both ways.
It depends on what it is. So you're looking at some players where I think when you're looking at preseason, there's a few things I can tell you about preseason. Is, you know, okay, where I'm watching the Magic game and Nick Johnson plays 15 minutes. That dude's probably not even going to make the roster. Those types of minutes really are a preseason game. I can tell you from watching the Phoenix Suns preseason that Marquise Chris is going to have a much better year than Dragan Bender. There are things you can take away from preseason.
But then that same thing would be, you could take back to Lopez. So who are the players playing around Lopez? Is it somebody that's not going to be on the roster, or is it somebody that he will actually be playing next to him in the actual season?
Right, but rebound rate is still sort of dictated by the amount of minutes you spend on the floor, no?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, but if you have people around you boxing people out, if you don't have somebody that's good at boxing someone out, then that person might be getting a rebound or two from you.
Well, that's why I'm asking you, because you've watched more Nets. When you were watching the Nets, was Brook Lopez the boxer?
I will be honest, their defense didn't look great. I was more excited for the pick and roll with Lin and Lopez.
I mean, that's what you're watching this year if you're a Nets fan. But enough about that. We got to get into this interview, so let's go ahead and do news.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now, if you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
It's official. Greg Oden is done playing basketball as a professional career after playing in China last year. He's now at Ohio State as a student coach and majoring in the sports industry. Kevin Garnett gauging interest as a coaching consultant with the Bucks and the Cavs. And now Dwight Howard set a Hawks franchise rebounding record in the debut performance, grabbing 19 boards against the Wizards. Side note, during that same game, Kent Bazemore hit John Wall from behind on a go-ahead dunk. You can imagine John Wall was not too pleased by that. In the Sixers have exercised their team options on Nick Stauskas, Joel Embiid, and Ja. PJ Tucker returned from back surgery in the Suns' debut loss to the Kings, playing 5 minutes. He has now played over 150 games straight in the NBA. Also, speaking of the Suns, they announced that Al McCoy will be inducted into the Suns' Ring of Honor. And if you haven't had a chance yet, make sure to go to our Facebook page and watch the video that Justin put up. It's an NBA roast of every team in the league. Facebook.com/Drive and Ditch Podcast. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
So we are joined on the line now by a special guest. His name is Amar. That's where you can follow him on Twitter at All That Amar. He's the editor and the writer at slcdunk.com, which is the Utah Jazz SB Nation website. Really great stuff there. Amar is a bit of man of mystery. He just is All That Amar for everything, and that's how we're going to be referring to him throughout this podcast, I would say. But before we get too heavy into the Jazz, because this is actually, believe it or not, one of our most requested episodes. We have a pretty heavy Jazz fan base, and so they've been looking for that Jazz exclusive episode for a while. But before we get into all that, because we have a whole lot to break down, you know, when we have somebody on for the first time, we like to ask them about, you know, we'd like to ask them about themselves. So I guess first off, Amar, you know, how did you become a Jazz fan, and you know, how did you get your start with SLC Dunk?
I became a Jazz fan in 1988. It was that Lakers against Utah Jazz second round playoff series that went to 7 games. That really solidified it for me. I was kind of wavering on what team was I going to start really, really getting into. And that was it, because it was like, oh, well, the Showtime Lakers are old. They're, you know, Kareem is going to be retiring soon. They'll never win another title, ever, ever. And these two young Stockton Malone guys, oh, wow, they look great. So I was a bandwagon fan.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that played off well for me, because if I stuck with the Lakers fandom, like most of my family, because we're used to live in Los Angeles, so yeah. They have a lot more championship success than my team has. But,
Amar, are you an NBA Jam guy by any chance?
I used to be, yeah. I like skipping high school classes to go out to the arcade and playing with quarters, yeah.
Yeah, I had it for Super Nintendo, or one of my best friends, I should say, but Stockton and Malone was my go-to every single time. They were just easily money in the bank on NBA Jam.
There was a huge AI exploit, because like if you kept the ball in the backcourt, he would elicit a double team, leaving one of the other guys open, so you just waited 2 seconds and then passed to an open guy for a dunk.
I'm going to have to keep that in mind next time I play. I haven't played in a bit, but I'm going to have to keep that in mind. So slcdunk.com, obviously, like we mentioned, the SB Nation site for the Utah Jazz. But, you know, how did you get involved there, and, you know, what made you start writing and such?
I used to write really, really long message board posts, and it became clear to me that this was not the format for it. So I needed to start writing and putting it somewhere where people would actually, you know, the people who want to read it will find it, instead of like people who are like, dude, you know, I don't need to read a college essay every time that you talk about rebounds. So I made a Blogspot site back in the early 2000s, and, you know, I was discovered that way and asked to participate. And eventually everyone on top of me ended up retiring, and, you know, I got the job.
It's all about being in the right place at the right time. But, you know, let's get into it. The Jazz, like we said, this has been one of our most requested episodes. So, you know, we're excited to have you on and talk everything Jazz. And I guess, so going back to last season, it's really when the expectations formed. I mean, I would argue that they started the season before, kind of towards the second half. But really last year, and especially going into this year, the expectations for this team has significantly risen. You know, just missed in the Western Conference last year. The expectations at the minimum are a playoff appearance this year. I guess as we get into the season, it's starting this week. You know, what is, I guess, overall, first, before we start breaking down specifics, what is the mood around this team? You know, what is the fan base's realistic expectations at, you know, at tip off?
I have to say that there are no realistic expectations anymore, because everyone is just expecting that this team is going to be the best team of all time. And, you know, bless us all as fans. That's what we actually want. The mood is a little bit tempered because of all the injuries. Derek Favors only played in one preseason game. Alec Burks, none. And Gordon Hayward is currently injured now. Going to miss at least, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. And he only played in, I think, 2 preseason games. So with those injuries in mind, people are expecting a little bit less from this team, especially with the way that the schedule sets off. They do think that this is going to be a playoff team. That's like the minimum. If they don't make the playoffs this year, then there have to be some some serious questions answered in the next offseason.
When I was going to pick up right where you were left off right there with Hayward, he's hurt, and I'm seeing reports that he's probably going to be out till about Thanksgiving with a broken finger. I guess, who are they going to find to replace his minutes, and who do you think's going to benefit the most from him being out for that amount of time?
Well, the guy who benefits the most right now is Joe Johnson, who is probably looking at coming off the bench for the first time of his career. He's... He plays around 3,000 minutes every year, and in Utah now, because of this injury, he's going to get a chance to start again at small forward, and that helps him out because he's in a new situation. He's going to be expected to do different things, but at least there is some level of familiarity that he's the guy starting the game. He's the guy who gets the offense going. It's going to be good for him, but like the depth issue, especially with Burks out, is a little bit tough. Another guy who's going to get a little bit more playing time as a result is Joe Ingles. He was probably looking at being the fifth wing. Now he's, by default, the third wing in the roster. So those two guys, what we like to call ISO Joe and Sloppy Joe, those guys are going to be playing a little bit more. And that's fine because they're both veterans. You know, Joe Ingles has played internationally for a billion years, and Joe Johnson has done the same here in the NBA, and experience is something that this team is going to have to rely on.
Yeah, I really like that signing when the Jazz brought in Joe Johnson. You know, it, like you mentioned, getting that experience and kind of bringing in guys who have been in the playoffs before can help the Jazz, you know, take that next step and get into the playoffs this year. A guy you mentioned who could benefit potentially from these minutes, but it's injured and really always seems to be injured, is Alec Burks. You know, a guy who, it seems like every time he figures himself into the conversation for the Jazz's future, there seems to be an injury. You know, where are the Jazz at for Alec Burks going forward? And, you know, I guess what are the expectations for him this season in terms of the rotation?
I feel like he is probably going to benefit a little bit from the fact that there's a little bit more depth. And as a result, number one, he's not going to be, like, the team isn't going to collapse if he's not playing, which was the case 2 years ago. The team really wasn't good enough when he wasn't out there because he was a number 12 draft pick, a lotto pick. Now, with more players on the team, when he does get back, and you know, we're conservatively saying it could be at any moment, but probably not before the end of November, when he does come back, he's not going to be playing, you know, half a game or 30 minutes a game or anything. He's probably going to fit into one of those rehab spots that, like, the San Antonio Spurs use. They'll get a guy to play and accept a smaller role, and I think that's probably another way to keep him healthy.
I want to bring this back a little bit to Gordon Hayward, because as you guys were talking about earlier on in the episode, that this season for the Jazz, there's so much hype behind it. I mean, you have Zach Lowe, who said that the Jazz are going to win 50-plus games, and I mean, arguably the Jazz would have been in the playoffs last year hadn't it been for that Gobert injury to start the season. Bringing back to Hayward a little bit, Rodney Hood said that he knew Gordon Hayward's injury was bad when he first saw it, because he could see the bone. I'm seeing multiple reports that Gordon Hayward's not actually going to need surgery on this finger and it's just going to be rehabbed. Having been somebody that actually had a really comparable injury suffered during playing basketball, I can tell you that with my hand personally, it's been close to 6 months, and that finger still really hurts and my shot's still messed up. Obviously, these guys are getting much better medical attention than I am, but are the Jazz worried that even if he can play, that his shot percentage, his shot's going to be off for a good portion of the season?
I think that is a significant worry, and it's not just going to be his shot, it's going to be his ball handling, it's going to be even how he goes for rebounds and stuff, everything that you do with that hand. Like, even if you are physically healed, it's the mental aspect of, you spent so many weeks or months protecting that hand or favoring it, like, it's going to be hard to change that when he gets on the court. So it's going to be tough for him. He's got the same doctor looking at it and taking care of him as the guy who did Trey Burke's hand surgery. And Trey Burke's shooting percentage has never really been great. So, something to worry about.
And Hayward's in a contract year, too, so I'm sure he's thrilled about the timing.
Well, Harrison Barnes, dude. Like, I think when Harrison Barnes is getting that type of money, you could have a bad year.
Also, Harrison Barnes is shooting the worst percentage of any player in the preseason. I just...
Yeah.
Just pointing that out.
Not good.
Well, and I wanted to ask you about the people that they've brought in this offseason, you know, between Boris Diaw, George Hill, and Joe Johnson. A lot of people are saying they think it might take a little bit of time for these guys to kind of gel with each other and the rest of the team in general. From what you've seen so far, and do you think it's going to take some time, or are they already kind of getting the hang of it?
It's really going to take some time. And as a result, I kind of look at it like it's probably that the Utah Jazz were going to lose some of the games that they're going to lose with Gordon out right now. Because even if he was there, they would probably lose it because it takes a while to get in sync. There are like two groups with this Utah Jazz team. They're the guys who have been around together, been through training camps and all that, and they kind of know Quinn Snyder's system. Boris Diaw doesn't know it. You know, Joe Johnson also doesn't know it. Like their games are mostly relied upon as isolation. Boris Diaw will take his guy off the dribble and post himself up. Joe Johnson will face up and try and do something from mid-range. Those two things are not parts of the Utah Jazz offense. And those are things that are going to have to somehow get incorporated into the Utah Jazz offense. Or these guys who are in their, 16th and 13th year in the league, they're going to have to learn new tricks. So it's going to be a huge transition for both of those guys. Less so for George Hill, who is used to being like a point guard, who is gets out of the way of wing players. He did that in San Antonio. He did that in Indiana. And that's kind of like the easier transition to what he's going to be doing in Utah.
The Jazz in general are still going to be kind of at a disadvantage in the point guard, you know, when they play other teams, at least in the West. You know, you have to deal with Curry and Chris Paul and all that. So how do you think George Hill's going to deal with his new role?
Well, yeah, going from the East to the West is definitely bad if you're a point guard and, you know, no one can stop Westbrook. Westbrook is going to be a maniac this year. It's going to be tough for him, sure, but he has to stick to what he does well. You know, he's a point guard who's got a 6'9" wingspan, and his thing is just going to be defense, and he's still going to get lit up. Anyone's going to get lit up, you know, trying to defend point guards in the West this year. And I think I like the fact that he's mature enough to realize that that's going to happen, and he just has to play his game. And I do think it's going to be an easier transition than Boris and Joe, but it's still going to be one which is a transition, and, you know, we'll know more about it. And if he's not good enough, and I actually think he is going to be good enough, then there's always Dante Exum who can switch over and play a little bit more point guard.
Well, and that was kind of leads into my next question, because I think one of the underrated things about the George Hill signing was that it gives that security a bit to allow Dante Exum to develop more slowly. You know, I feel like Dante Exum's been forgot about a little bit. This is a guy who went number 4 in the draft 2 years ago, who was a bit of a man of mystery coming out of Australia and then coming over to America. And it seems like we finally started to get a grip on him. And then he went down with the ACL injury. So it still feels like there's a bit of an aura of that mystery around Dante Exum. So, but he's 100% now, finally. You know, what can we expect from Dante Exum? And for those who haven't really seen too much of Dante Exum, you know, what are his strengths going to be this year for this team?
Yeah, I think they're going to, like, as a fan, my homer idea is that I would want him to be good enough to be the starter by, like, March or April. I don't know if that's going to happen. As a realist, I think what you need to expect from him this year is a guy who is going to see some minutes at shooting guard and point guard. Like, in the preseason, he's been starting at shooting guard in the games Rodney Hood's been out. And he's someone who can do a lot of stuff in the pick and roll. He's very quick, and he's also long, so he's going to technically be a proficient defender on the perimeter. He doesn't hit the glass enough, and it seems like one day he'll be really aggressive, and the next day he'll be very passive. And I guess that's the critical component for a young player. Like, he's got to learn what his speed is and then go at that speed consistently, because if he doesn't know how he's going to play every single game, how can the coaches game plan for that, you know? So he's got a lot of learning to do as a young player. And, you know, for the guys who don't know about him, like, the knock on him was that he couldn't shoot threes. He didn't shoot it that well in the preseason, but he's displayed that he's at least like a 33% guy. And, you know, if they leave him open, that's only going to get other parts of his game going, because he's going to hit that shot.
I think if you're the way it breaks down is, if you're shooting, what, 30% from three, you're actually shooting 50% from two. So, but I mean, how does it feel to be a Jazz fan where last year they arguably for stretches didn't really even have a point guard, and now you're looking at a team that has four point guards between George Hill, Exum, Mack, Nato. You know, how does it feel feel to be a Jazz fan in that aspect? And piggybacking off that question, how often are we going to see dual point guard lineups kind of taking a page out of the Phoenix Suns playbook?
I think with Utah Jazz fans, like, point guard play is like the cornerstone or foundation. Like, we have that. I kind of forget his name. What was his name? Like, Jim Stockford or something?
Yeah, he was kind of good. He was just a little good.
Yeah. And that Deron Winchester guy, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think I've heard of him.
Less so, yeah. Point guard play is important to Utah Jazz fans. It's also important to the Sets because they play at a slower pace. It's a half-court game. You need a good quarterback who knows what he's doing and is able to bring people together and instruct them on the court. So we're going to love to see that this year. George Hill definitely knows what he's doing. Dante Exum, like you said before, he's someone who's come along a little slower because George Hill is there. Two-guard sets, I think we are going to see more and more of that. That's kind of what Quinn Snyder is moving towards. His offense is at least three ball handlers on the court at the same time, either be them small forwards or point forwards or combo guards or whatever. So with four good point guards, and especially right now, like, they just waived Chris Johnson, there are fewer active, healthy wing players. It only seems natural that they're going to go with point guard, point guard.
Well, you kind of just brought up three points that I have questions about. I'll kind of just hit one, and then we'll get on to the other ones.
One at a time, man.
We'll go one at a time. Well, but first, one was more just a comment. Quinn Snyder's a terrifying dude. I'm just putting that out there. Have you ever seen, like...
Well, I've never met him in person.
No, but the pictures, the dude looks terrifying. He scares me. Uh-huh. And if you ever go to the Jazz Reddit, the fans agree. They're like, yeah, he's terrifying, but we love him.
You know, funny thing is, Kevin used to say that about my ex-girlfriend.
That he was assistant coach at Duke?
No, that she was terrifying.
Quinn Snyder is universally feared.
I heard a story that he called a timeout, and instead of saying anything, he just stared at the team for the entire timeout.
That's the way to go.
That's terrifying.
They went on a run after that, I think.
See? It worked, but...
No, it worked. At work, if my boss was to call a meeting and not do anything, but we just looked at each other, that would send a signal.
Okay, all right, back to the question that I have, though. No, you brought up their pace and how they were they were the slowest team last year. I guess my question to you, with the new guys coming in and them kind of being vets, do you think they're going to stay with the slow pace, or are they going to pick it up a little bit? And I guess, how is that going to translate to their assists? Because they were bottom five in assists last year, and this year, at least in the preseason, I think Shelvin Mack's leading the team with like three per game.
Yeah, when Shelvin Mack is leading your team in anything, then you have some soul searching to do. Sorry, Shelvin. I call it Mac Ops. You know, like Black Ops. His crazy no-scope three-pointers that never go in. It's great. Fantastic. Shout out to all the real gamers out there.
I know. I'm on that level with you. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. Because I made this really bad Photoshop of Shelvin Mack with the Black Ops thing. It's purposely bad, but then some people are like, oh, it's awesome. And they made it their, like, avatar picture. It takes me totally out of my game. Like, don't you know? This was just a joke, but ridiculous.
I think that's peak Utah Jazz fanhood when you're making Shelvin Mack memes.
Yeah, exactly. Or some sort of non-diagnosed psychosis. But as for the pace of play, they're going to keep it slow, especially with the fact that they got older and guys are hurt, and the offense is basically based around trying to get a mismatch. There's a lot of dribble handoffs. There's a lot of screen work. It's hard to speed that up at all. And right now, especially if Favors is out, and hopefully he's not, that means Boris Diaw is starting, and right now Hayward is out, and that means that Joe Johnson is starting. And those two guys can't run, so obviously they're not going to go any faster. The assists are going to either be there or not there. I think they're going to be less there this year, especially with those two guys are isolation players. But I think it's the Spurs thing that really matters. It's about playing slow, playing deliberate, making passes, and making sure that the other team frustrates themselves into a win. Like, the players aren't going to get, like, DeMarcus Cousins numbers on the Jazz. They play slow, and they don't play a lot of minutes. And as a result, that favors older guys more than younger guys.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, too, regarding the pace of play, because I think there was... We were talking about this on an earlier episode where it just seems like everybody in the NBA is talking about running and gunning. But I mean, if you look at three of the fastest teams last year, two of which were the Kings and the Suns. So just playing at a faster pace doesn't mean that you are a better NBA team.
Yeah, I did a analysis of that, looking at defensive rating and win percentage and pace of play, and defensive rating correlates with win percentage much better than pace does.
And a guy who obviously measures extremely high in that statistic is Rudy Gobert. And the GM survey just came out, and it was talking about best defenders, and for some reason, Rudy Gobert is not on that list. You know, for those people who may not watch the Jazz on a regular basis, break down how elite defensively Rudy Gobert truly is and how much of a game changer he is at that five position.
The first thing about Rudy Gobert is the fact that, like, he's a maniac. And that goes into point. Like, when the GM survey came out, he retweeted it just saying, "Hey, look, I'm not on this list for defensive player." like that's some either Ron Artest or serial killer thing right there. But,
him and Dame seem to be the kings of the underdogs, where they just take every slight so personally.
Definitely, and I think Rudy does that. Like, he has like his own list of like beat writers who say bad things about him, and he doesn't answer their questions, it seems like.
Well, we're gonna have to keep that in mind.
So we all love Rudy Gobert. He's fantastic. Defensively, what he does is that he grew up playing sports. So he wasn't just a tall guy who got into basketball later in life, and he's not just a tall guy, he's super tall, but he is an athlete, and that's kind of weird. Like, you see that in a few players, like Carl Anthony Towns. He's another guy who is super tall, but also is an athlete, and the problem with that is it's hard to beat him. He rotates really well, and he uses his frame really well on defense, and if you look at the advanced stats, and I don't want to make this like a goddamn calculus lecture, but they all seem to favor him. He really defends the paint very well, and he's the anchor of the Utah Jazz defense. And that's kind of why like they've gotten rid of guys who would have complimented him, like Tibor Pleiss, but kept in guys like Jeff Whitney, who kind of mimic what Gobert does as a rim defender, because everything is built around him.
Well, piggybacking off what you just said there, one of the episodes we did at the end of last season is we kind of broke down the players from that year, and we all made lists, really not like lists matter as far as where you're ranking players, but our very own Justin Cousart on his list had Nerlens Noel ahead of Rudy Gobert. And just getting your opinion, would you rather have Nerlens Noel or Rudy Gobert on your team?
I actually don't know if there is a right answer to that, because I think Noel has a lot of talent. Like, he's displayed it, especially, like, come on, like, 4 blocks a game in college? That's ridiculous. I think right now Gobert is getting a lot more minutes. He's been relatively healthier, and he's made huge strides with his free throw shooting, so I would favor Gobert at this point, but I do think Noel, it's not out of the question that Noel could be an all-star in the East if things go well for him.
So Rudy Gobert was taken, what, 2013?
Yeah, number 27.
Okay, if you could go back and redraft the 2013 draft, and you were the Utah Jazz, wouldn't you rather have taken Alex Len instead?
Well, obviously. Like, have you seen his girlfriend? She's the most beautiful giraffe I've ever seen.
But just from on-court play.
Yeah, I think that that you would rather have Gobert over Len. You'd have Gobert over a lot of the other big men who were taken in the first round. The thing about him, and this is something that I saw because I was at the draft combine actually working one day, he tanked his thing. He tanked every single event at the combine because nobody knew that he was actually playing with a broken toe that would later, after he got drafted, he had toe surgery to repair that. So he looked really out of it. He couldn't plant well. He couldn't turn well. He was very slow. And that affected everyone's eyeball test on him. And I was like, wait, this is like the things that he's telling me and the things that I've heard from scouts in Europe, they're like, this guy is a lot better than what he's showing today. So I think that helped. Like, if you had international scouting or if you relied on the scouts that came to the combine, you got a different opinion of Rudy Gobert, and that's why he went 27.
And one of the players I wanted to bring up also, who had a pretty good year last year, or at least fans seem to be pretty excited about this year for him, is Rodney Hood. But looking at his preseason numbers, at least from three, he's only shooting 16%. I guess my question to you is, you know, is that just a fluke? Should that be something they're worried about? And do you think Rodney Hood can live up to his expectations this season?
Well, first of all, it's not a fluke for him to go, you know, for 2 weeks and shoot 16% from three. He's a very streaky guy. He's one of the streakiest shooting guards I've seen in a Utah Jazz uniform. And that's, like, the hard thing about him is that if he gets consistent minutes, you don't know what you're going to get from him on his outside shooting. So he has to be able to be effective when he's shooting poorly. And that's going to be something that we need to see. He didn't necessarily prove that to me in this preseason. He didn't hit the glass. He wasn't distributing as much, but he was shooting bad from three. Does that mean that in the next 20 games, he doesn't shoot 55% from three? Of course not, but it is, you know, that's why there's something called an average. It averages out over time, and over enough shots, I think he is okay. Does that mean that he's someone that I would worry about? Yes. Is that something that's going to prevent him from meeting his expectations? Maybe. He's a Duke guy. The head coach is a Duke guy. I think there's a little bit of favoritism there. And, you know, that's just me being mean. Everyone has only nice things to say about Hood. When I met him, he was, like, the best human being I've ever met. So what he does on a basketball court, is he going to be able to be an NBA-level starter on offense only? Is he someone who can play defense? These are all going to be questions for the third-year player.
So everyone always talks about starters on a team, but I find, especially when you're talking about the Jazz team, who, when healthy, are one of the deepest teams in the league. But I find it more interesting to talk about who the closers will be on this team. And who, what do you see as a closing lineup in close game situations?
If everyone's healthy, and the other team isn't, like, starting a guy who's 6'6" at center, I'd like to have Rudy Gobert out there as a closer. He's proven that he can close games defensively. He has to prove that he can hit free throws. And in the preseason, he's shooting, I think, like, 8 free throws a game and hitting 74%. I think that's good enough to keep him in for a close game if you can keep those numbers up. From there, it's kind of like a crapshoot. The rest of my lineup would probably be Derek Favors, Joe Johnson, Gordon Hayward, and Dante Exum, just because he's a little bit younger and he can cause a little bit more havoc than George Hill can.
Really? You see Exum closing games over George Hill?
Well, if I was coach, yeah.
Okay.
it's not likely that he will, but I really like what he's doing out there. I also like what he gets better depending on who's on the court with him, and which is like a really weird concept. It's like a video game concept. Like, you get like a bonus with him on the court with Joe Ingles for some reason.
Is that Aussie connection?
It seems like it. Like when he was a kid growing up, Joe Ingles was his favorite basketball player, and now he's on the same team as him, which I think it's hilarious. But then the same thing happened with Rodney Hood and his favorite player growing up, which was Joe Johnson.
Yeah, it's always crazy how some of those weird connections work out. You know, Ben Simmons to another Aussie guy is, you know, being coached now by Brett Brown, who coached Ben Simmons' dad. So just all sorts of wild stuff like that. But like we said, the expectations for the Jazz now are, you know, much higher this season. So we're going to put you on the spot real quick. You know, we've heard 50-plus, like Tim said, Zach Lowe has said the Jazz could win over 50 games. What seed are you putting the Jazz at, and how many games are they winning?
52 wins, and they're going to be the fifth seed.
I like it.
Hey,
like
how about in the division?
Oh, they'll be second in the division.
Really? Who do you have on top in the division? Is it, hold on, Portland?
I think it's Portland, mainly because you can't rely on Enes Kanter for anything, and Oklahoma's going to need to rely on someone to help Russell this year.
Well,
I think Debo can do it.
Well, let me ask you a question then. Based off of not being able to rely on Russell Westbrook, that and his canter to your point, I mean, if you look at the conference, really the entire Western Conference, and you look at Portland last year, so much of their success was dictated on the lack of health by other teams. So, can you count on a lack of health by other teams and Portland being completely healthy this year?
Oh, absolutely, because they have some sort of voodoo magic in Portland. Like, I think it's some sort of like hipster hobo brew free trade free
an IPA.
Yeah, exactly.
But
I think the good thing about Portland is the fact that they don't necessarily have talented bigs. They just live off of offensive rebounds, and they have a legion of that, and their main threats are perimeter guys who shoot from the perimeter, so that leads to more rebounds. It's like a force multiplier there. They were lucky with injuries. I think we saw a lot of other teams that were very lucky with injuries as well, like Golden State. But I you can't worry about it, and this is coming from a team that seems perpetually injured. You know, the only team that's had it worse are the Pelicans, I guess. But I do see Portland winning out. Oklahoma, I want to love them, but, like, I don't think I can. Like, I like Sabonis. I like Ersan Ilyasova. Like, they have this weird collection of talent, but I don't know if it's going to end up being the number one, you know, Northwest Division team.
Now, I was just thinking the other day, and I'm really happy that we have you on the show because you're so much smarter than I am. I was driving along, and it was a concept I was thinking about, and I was thinking about how the Celtics added Al Horford and how everyone's so high on the signing and the offensive impact that a stretch five can have. But then I was thinking that if you have a stretch five on the floor, that you're giving up a lot of offensive rebounds. And so I guess my question to you is, how good of a shooter does a stretch five have to be to justify the lack of offensive rebounds you're going to be getting with him on the court?
He has to be at least as good as Mehmet Okur, who was like a 36-37% shooter from downtown, because otherwise you're just hurting yourself.
Okay, well, I mean, that's a quantifiable answer. Thank you.
No, and I love that we got a Mehmet Okur reference, and that's great. But All That Amar, make sure you follow him on Twitter at All That Amar. Check out his writing and editing. He is in charge of the site, slcdunk.com. That is the Utah Jazz SB Nation site. And so, Amar, we always like to get our guests out of here on a fun note. And so I was doing my homework, looking at your Twitter timeline, and I see you were tweeting about Civilization 6. So I used to be a big RTS nerd. I've slowed down a little bit, but I still play occasionally. My go-to back in the day was Age of Empires. So I guess for all time, is Civilization what you're going with, or what's your go-to RTS game?
Oh man, I was just thinking about Age of Empires the other day. I was gonna if I met Gordon Hayward in a mall or something, I wouldn't ask him about basketball. I was going to ask him an Age of Empires question.
I'm telling you, Age of Empires 2, I've spent so many hours on that game that I just...
People are still playing it. People will download it and play it in 2016. That's a clear winner for me.
Hey, I still play Warcraft 2.
Oh, yeah. No, that's super great. Like, that's like my level of micromanaging. Anything more than that, and I can't handle it.
There was Warcraft 2, and then you guys talked about Age of Empires, but then there was also Command and Conquer. There was Command and Conquer Generals is a really great game, but they started introducing planes, and I can't. Once there's more than one mode of transportation.
So the note to self is: anytime I need to beat you, just send planes at you.
Yeah, because I just can't guard two things at once.
Right. They added a whole new dimension, and it was.
It is. It threw my entire
game.
So
you are not the Rudy Gobert of RTS defense.
Well, I mean, I guess you could call it, I'm the Rudy Gobert of games, meaning that I only impact one side of the court.
That's excellent. And you can tell that this is just fans of perpetual lotto teams, Utah included here, just like, our hobbies are doing other things that make us feel bad about ourselves.
And my other comment on that is, Rudy Gobert, if you're listening to this, that was Tim, so you don't have to talk to him, but me and Kevin from the Drive and Dish podcast.
No, I'm throwing shots. I mean, Rudy Gobert, in all honesty, in the preseason, I know he really wanted to work on not just being known as a shot blocker, and his offense, I mean, it's looked a lot better.
I think Boris is going to help him a lot, because he's going to teach him about passing angles. And even if you're not going to be like a post-up guy, you can be effective on offense as a big man if you're making sure that the ball doesn't stick with you, and that's going to help a lot.
And whenever he's fatigued, he can go to Boris's locker for an espresso to pick him up.
Yeah, I know. Boris is amazing. He's so meme-worthy. It's going to be great to have him as a blogger.
I'm telling you, just to use the term Borista on a regular basis. But anyway, All That Amar.
Oh, dude, I got to hashtag that right now.
I'm telling you, man. Make it happen. All That Amar. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at All That Amar. Check out slcdunk.com. We appreciate you coming on, man. This is awesome.
This is the best part of my week.
Oh, I'm glad we could be a part of that. And your Twitter bio says that we're now your best friends. So we'd like to welcome you into best friendhood.
Yep. Oh, thank you so much. And if you ever need anything, you ran out of milk, I got milk here. You can come here. Whatever you need, man.
Is that what they drink in Utah?
I can only imagine.
Well, they can't drink beer.
Are they? What do they eat in Utah? Like every state's known for something regarding food. What is Utah known for?
It's a few things. Number one is that they have this Jell-O thing with fruit in it, like a fruit suspension. They have these funeral potatoes. You think that Idaho would be the potato thing, but Utah's got these potatoes too that they're really proud of.
Oh, I thought it was porridge.
Those could be like some other group that I'm not familiar with. The big thing that Utah has going for it right now is like antidepressant use.
Wait, wasn't there a poll that just came out that said that people in Utah were actually the happiest
in the
country? Yeah. Maybe that's because of all the antidepressants they're on.
They're just so happy.
Yeah,
right.
They're drugged and happy.
We got to put an asterisk next to this. They're cheating.
there's a definite correlation between these two things.
Yeah. Oh,
well,
man.
Problem solved.
This is amazing. Thank you, Amar. We appreciate you, man.
You guys are the best. Keep listening.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Appreciate you guys as always. Make sure you check out our episodes on our website, drivingdishpodcast.com. Also, we want to shout out the good folks at Blog Talk Radio for hosting us. Apple users, we're on iTunes. Non-Apple users, we are on the Google Play Store. We are on Stitcher. We are on Player FM. We are on TuneIn.
Let me just take a minute to talk about the website. The website looks like garbage right now. Something happened. Our website expired. Mm. I am in the process of building us a new one.
We're trusting that process, too.
You got to trust it. Until then, there's a very temporary one that's up right now. It does have our episodes on it. So if you go to our website, we're aware.
We're fixing it.
I work two jobs and go to school and podcasts. At some point, I will get this done over the next couple of weeks.
And give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. It really helps us move up the rankings and helps other people to find our episodes and find us in general.
Also, in theory, that's working.
Also, shout out to LA Sparks, WNBA champions. Yeah. I know Tim's giving me the look that I actually, watched something with WNBA, but that's what a finish. That one's wild.
Well, there's some memes coming out after where it was like, the Staples Center finally got a banner or the real CP3, and those kind of things. But seriously, hats off. I was listening to somebody the other day talk about how women's college basketball has so much more of a national following than the WNBA, and they really think people should give another look to the WNBA.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da. Hey!
Let's go while we're young!
All right, I think they get the point.